Last week, Montreal neo-Nazi Gabriel Soyer-Chaput was sentenced to 15 months in jail and 3 years probation for inciting hatred against Jewish people. This follows a guilty verdict earlier in January. Soyer-Chaput wrote hundreds of anti-Semitic articles for the Daily Stormer under the pen name Charles Zeiger. So many articles, in fact, that he was the hate site's second most prolific author. He was on trial for a 2017 article that called for non-stop Nazism everywhere. Soyer-Chaput was unmasked by a team of Montreal journalists. Today, I talked to one of those journalists. John Milton was part of the original exposé in the Montreal Gazette. We speak about Soyer-Chaput's sentencing and the rise of far-right hate in Canada. Here's our conversation. All right, so thanks so much, John, for talking to me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's dive right in. Your piece for the Montreal Gazette back in 2018 called Gabriel Soyer-Chaput one of North America's most influential neo-Nazis. So, you know, just how important was this guy as a writer and a white supremacist organizer?
That's right. So Gabriel Soyer-Chaput was a longstanding figure in the North American far right, who helped to build a lot of the digital infrastructure that the far right used to propagate itself, particularly that which came to prominence in the aftermath of the Trump election in 2016. What he is most well known for is his role at a website called the Daily Stormer, which is a website that has been repeatedly kicked off of various cloud hosting services because of its extremist content. The Daily Stormer was a sort of a, you know, quote unquote news website that tried to be a sort of a Nazi version of BuzzFeed that used memes and used humor as a way to desensitize readers, typically targeting younger readers, towards hateful ideologies and neo-Nazi content. And when we talk about neo-Nazi content, I want to be clear that that's not hyperbolic. We're talking about a website that featured swastikas in a lot of its visual identity, a website that talked about the Holocaust as something that was good and that should be repeated, that didn't go far enough. We're talking about a website that, you know, under a cloak of irony, because of course all of this was done in a way that, at least in what the authors were hoping, would be sort of like hide themselves behind a layer of plausible deniability and, you know, quote unquote, ironic humor. So that became a sort of key rhetorical device by the neo-Nazi movement and the far right in North America during the last sort of wave of far right activity. And the pioneering people behind that were the people at the Daily Stormer, where Gabriel Soyer-Chaput, operating under the name Zeiger, was generally referred to as the second in command of that website, behind the leader Andrew Anglin. Otherwise, Soyer-Chaput also was an administrator on a hate forum website, which no longer exists, called Iron March. Iron March was also, along with being a more serious outlet for neo-Nazis to interact with one another, that shed any sort of pretense of irony. So he had his hands, all this to say, he had his hands in a lot of different elements of the neo-Nazi movement in North America and helped to create a lot of the digital infrastructure that that movement used to organize itself in the early 21st century.
He was just sentenced last week to 15 months in jail. Now, this is quite a bit above the 3 months that was recommended by both Crown and defense attorneys back in July. What do you make of this decision as someone who's covered Soyer-Chaput, but also the far right more broadly? Can we see this major sentencing as something that could set a precedent? Or, you know, are these exceptional circumstances for somebody who was, by all accounts, an unrepentant and very prolific Nazi?
I think that my first reaction upon seeing the sentencing was what was of shock and surprise. Throughout the course of the trial and into the sentencing hearings, I was preparing myself for the eventuality that he was going to be found not guilty. From the beginning, the trial of Soye Chapu, I mentioned a bit of a laundry list of things that that he was involved in, as in his organizing as a neo-Nazi. Almost none of that was included as evidence against him in the trial. The only thing that the trial was based on was one single article that he authored at the Daily Stormer. And it appears to me like the only reason why Soye Chapu got a sentence as harsh as he did of 15 months rather than the 3 months is because of the judge on the case. It seems like a fairly obvious assessment here is that the judge saw the evidence of the case and saw the compromise that the Crown and the defense were making with one another to put Zeiger away for 3 months and then have probation after that, and said that that's not enough. And the judge, I guess I'm hesitant to use this type of language because I don't have a legal background, but it seems to me like the judge is sort of trying to set a precedent around hate speech and then sort of incitement to hatred, I should say. Sorry, is the charge that that Soye Chapu was found guilty of. This is one of the harsher sentences for that crime in the history of that crime being charged. So it's possible that this becomes, if not a legal precedent, which it could be. I mean, again, I'm not a lawyer. I can't say for sure. But it is at least something that hopefully others who would use that same discourse and be involved in that same organizing look at this type of thing and think twice about their participation in hate movements.
So speaking of other hate actors, you know, there's been reports, one from 2020 published by the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, which found that acts of far-right terror and hate groups in Canada both tripled in the 5 years previous. You know, this seems to be something that we in Canada should be more and more concerned about. But there is kind of a tendency in popular discourse, in the media, to look at far-right extremism as an American import. I guess, how do we reconcile that with a case like this where, you know, a Montrealer, a Canadian, becomes really load-bearing infrastructure for these predominantly American hate networks and publications?
I think that the idea that you can divide the far right, particularly between the US and Canada or the Anglophone United States and Canada, into two discrete categories, is just doesn't totally bear up to scrutiny. I think that there's a lot of cross-border contamination that happens going in both directions, right? So the Rebel Media is a right-wing news outlet that's popular among far-right activists, and that outlet, which for a long time employed people like Gavin McInnes and Faith Goldie. Gavin McInnes, founder of the Proud Boys, a far-right street fighting group. Faith Goldie is a well-known Canadian neo-Nazi. That media infrastructure, which is Canadian, influences media infrastructure in the United States, right? So it's not just an import coming from the United States, but Canadian far-right infrastructure also influences what's happening in the United States. And those sides are in contact with one another. And I think to look at Zeiger in particular, Gabriel Soye Chapu in particular, one way where that becomes clear is that one of the reasons why I began to investigate Soye Chapu is because of his participation in the hate rally and the race riots in Charlottesville, Virginia, in 2017. That event where Soye Chapu, along with Sean Beauvais MacDonald, Vincent Bélanger-Mercure, and other Montreal-based neo-Nazis, appeared in a Vice documentary about the hate rally. And that's how they ended up on a lot of people's radars, including mine. All this to say that these are Canadians, these are Quebecois who traveled across the border so that they could participate in this American hate rally, right? And there's also, Canadian far right infrastructure that influences the American far right project, and vice versa. And so while there are discrete differences between the Canadian far right, just by virtue of geographic distance, they are very much in contact with one another. They're learning from one another, and they are coordinating with one another in real ways.
Yeah, and you spoke a bit about how Soyez Chaput came onto your radar, and I know that part of that was work from anti-fascists as well, who were trying to uncover his identity and the identity of his allies online. I guess what can we learn from the folks that you have been in contact with or worked with who are, not journalists, but are working tirelessly to expose and counter these far-right forces here in Canada and abroad.
That's right. I mean, the work that we did on Gabriel Soyez-Chaput and identifying Zeiger as Gabriel Soyez-Chaput would have been completely impossible without the dedicated work of Montreal-based anti-fascists, who worked to find the identity of Soyez-Chaput, who worked to find the identity of many of his collaborators. And sort of unearthed the existence of neo-Nazi networks in the city and beyond, in Quebec in general. Those people do long and thankless work to protect their communities from the threat of hate movements and recognize them for what they are, as being threats to the communities that we live in. So I think that what can we learn from anti-fascist movements? I think that the answer is that if we want to take the far right seriously as a threat, then we need to actually put time and effort into understanding who they are, what their plans are, and how we can weaken the networks of far right extremism in this country. And anti-fascists are doing that work every day. They're working times with journalists like myself to create exposés when that is strategically useful to do so. And they're also engaged in all types of organizing in their communities that make their communities less vulnerable to recruitment and to the type of organizing that far-right activists would seek to do, which is the type of organizing that is fundamentally divisive and based in scapegoating vulnerable communities. If there's a lesson for us to learn, it's that do everything you can in your community to make it so that it is not a welcoming place for neo-Nazis and racists and fascists. Because if they don't have a fertile ground to pull from, then they have nothing. And that's a lot of what it is that they're trying to build with the infrastructure like that Soyez-Chaput had built over the course of his time as an organizer.
Great. Well, I think that that's a great place to end. So, John, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thanks so much for having me.